Trolling in Shmuel in Sefer Shmos, Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud, and the Midrash brings down that as Moshe was raised by Paro, Paro was sitting around the table, he's having his weekly meeting with his advisors. And as usual, Moshe is sitting there on his lap. He's playing around, and all of a sudden, Moshe reaches up, takes the crown off the head of Paro, and places it on his own head. So all the advisors are immediately alarmed, and they say, "Oh my gosh! Isn't this the prophecy that we have that some young boy will come and take the crown off of your head and take the Jewish people out of Egypt?" So they didn't know what to do. This might be the redeemer of the Jewish people. One advisor by the name of Bilam says, "Paro, you got to take action right now. You got to kill him on the spot. Don't take any chances. Kill him right now." Another advisor by the name of Yisro, who actually became the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu many years later, says, "Oh, what are you talking about? He's a little kid. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't realize. Right, what are you getting all bent out of shape for?" Right? So, what do you do? How do we know that he's really a kid? What we need to do is you need to test him, right? What do? You place a plate full of amber, a plate full of golden coins. Amber shines more than the coins because it's got the fire. And if he's a smart kid, he's going to reach for the golden coins. If he doesn't know what he's doing, he's going to reach for the amber that shines more. So that's what they did. Now, in fact, Moshe Rabbeinu was very smart. He was a very, very wise kid. And when he placed him with these, when they placed these two plates in front of him, what does he do? He reaches for the golden coins.
He was starting to go there.
Yeah. And then the Malach came down. Malach Yisrael came down, pushed his hand over to the coals, over to the amber. He touches the burning coals, and what does a kid do when he touches something hot?
He puts it in his mouth.
Exactly. Immediately, straight to the mouth. And from then on, it became lame of speech. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu was lame of speech. In any case, he grows up. He's saved by the skin of his teeth. He grows up as the grandson of Pharaoh. The Pasuk Yudalef continues, So he grows up, and it says he went out to his brethren. He would help them. It says he would take a heavy load off the older man, would place it on a younger man. He would try to help them however he could. Not only that, but it says that he would advise his grandfather, step-grandfather, Paro. He told him, "Listen, you have all these slaves, you have a massive workforce, but you're using them in a very ineffective way. How so? If you work them 7 days a week, you're going to wear them down very quickly. You have to give them at least 1 day to rest. Give them 1 day to rest, and then they'll be much more effective in the other 6 days where they're actually working." So Paro thinks about it for a little bit, and he says, "Yeah, you know what? Sounds like a good idea. Which day do you think we should give them off?" So Moshe sits for a minute. He says, I don't know. Maybe Saturday, you know. That sounds like a pretty good day, right?" Paro says, "Fine. Give them Saturday off. They have, from then on, the Bnei Israel had Shabbos off, thanks to Moshe Rabbeinu." Now, one day, as he goes out, he sees this Ish Mitzri, Ma Ke Ish Ivri Me'echad. He sees this Egyptian hitting this Jew. Now, it says, he realized that he was actually trying to kill him. It wasn't just the regular beatings that used to happen regularly.
He was an overseer. He wasn't a regular worker.
Right, right.
Baruch he was one of the bosses there. Which one was it, Dasan or Rivian?
Wait, so hold on. So no, this Dasan and Rivian come later. We'll see. So this Ish Mitzri comes over. Now the way it worked, the way the system was, is over every 10 Jews, there was one Jewish taskmaster, one shoiter, and over every 10 of those Jewish shoiterim, those Jewish taskmaster, there was another Egyptian taskmaster. A Nogesh. Now, the way the system was, every morning, the Egyptian, the Nogesh, would come and wake up the 10 Jews that he was in charge of. Each one of them, in turn, went to wake up his 10 Jews that was under him, that Shoter. And then that's how they would start the day's work. Now it happened to be that this shoter was under this Egyptian nogesh, and this Egyptian nogesh took a liking to this man's wife. She happened to be a very outgoing, very social, very outspoken woman. It says that she would say hello to everybody. She would say hi, how you doing? She would open a conversation, and apparently this Egyptian decided he wanted to be with her. So one day he goes over to their tent. He wakes up the husband early, extra early. Tells him, yeah, we have extra work today. You have to go wake up all your 10 Jews. Right? Go ahead, wake up all your 10 Jews. So the husband leaves. The Egyptian waits there for a few minutes. Then he walks into the tent. He lives with this woman, with a wife. She had no idea. She thought it was her husband coming back. And then...
Why don't you turn on the lights, though? It was
early in the morning. They didn't have lights.
What I don't understand is how she should know it's not her husband.
She didn't know. She saw him, man. It's pitch black. Still early in the morning.
She gave him an excuse. I didn't know. I thought it was you. I mean, I thought it was you. You can't tell.
Apparently not.
That's what bothers me, but keep going.
Okay. In any case, the husband comes back. He realizes what happened, that his wife was effectively raped. And that whole day, he's looking at this Nogesh, this Egyptian that's in charge of him, kind of giving him that look, saying, I know exactly what you have done. Yeah. And when the Egyptian realized that the Jew was onto him, he wanted to cover up his actions by killing this Jew, apparently, even though the Jews were slaves. However, it was unaccepted to go ahead and walking around raping their wives. So, he tries to kill him. And Moshe Rabbeinu walks in onto the scene as this is happening, as this Egyptian is trying to kill this Jew. So it says, Vayven koy v'choy, pasuk beis, Vayven koy v'choy. He looks this way, he looks that way. The Medrash says that he was trying to see through Ruach HaKodesh if this Egyptian has any righteous future generations that would be coming out of him. Vayakienish, he sees that there's no one, right? The simple understanding is that there's no one around. According to the Medrash, he sees that there's no one righteous that was going to come out of this Egyptian. Vayaches haMitzri veit menel b'chol, right? He kills the Mitzri through Shem and Mepharash, and he buries him in the sand.
He did that because even then with them, they weren't allowed to be adulterous.
Right.
He was an adulterer, so
yeah.
Kim to Misa.
Right, right.
Jewish, he's a Ben Nayach. He'd have to be Jewish.
Right, he's a Ben Nayach, right? They have to be Mekayim the Shev Misa Bnei Nayach, and Gil Arayis is Chayav Misa. Yeah. In any case, Moshe thinks this story is behind him. However, not so fast. These two Jews are now fighting, trying to kill each other. He turns to them and he says, why are you trying to hit each other? Why are you trying to kill each other? So, at this point, one of them turns and says to Moshe, oh, you think you're going to go ahead and kill me like you killed the Egyptian yesterday? You think nobody knows? We know exactly what you have done.
And he said, but he also said to him, who are you thinking those are not business?
Right.
Who are you?
Yeah, who do you think you are?
I mean, it'd be like it was what you did to us.
Right.
Well, this is our business. Yep. They were fighting because he wanted to divorce his wife because of what happened, and then the other one was that there was his relative, and they didn't want to. Right, that's what they were fighting about.
Right, right. Now the ironic part is that the woman that was raped was the wife of Dasan, which means that Moshe was avenging her honor. And in return, what does her husband do? Instead of thanking him, he goes ahead and reports it to Paro. They both went together. So Moshe is avenging your wife, and then you go ahead and that's how you repay him. Now, at this point, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Achen Noida Adavar. Now the matter is revealed. What is he referring to? The matter explains, Chazal explained, that what he's referring to is he's saying, now I understand why the Jewish people are suffering so in Egypt. Until now, I had akasha. I didn't get it. Why are they suffering so much? But now that I see that they have Lashon Hara among them, they speak Lashon Hara, now I understand fully why they deserve to be punished and tortured in such a way. Now, it's a bit hard to understand, because the way the Jewish people were suffering in Egypt was very severe. This wasn't like, oh yeah, they were kind of slaves, you know, the Egyptians, you know, were whipping them every now and then. No, they were, like, what the Egyptians were doing to the Jews was literally Nazi type of activity. It was a virtual Holocaust that was happening over there. So now Moshe Rabbeinu says, oh, because they speak Lashon Hara, they're suffering in such a way? Really? Lashon Hara is so bad that you get killed, you get whipped, you get tortured in such a way? Just like a Holocaust? But the deeper explanation is that when a person Chas V'Shalom does an Avera, right, he creates a spiritual spirit, a spiritual being, some kind of malach of sorts, and this malach goes up to Shemaim and gives a report of the Avera that this person had done. Now, once the malach reaches Hashem, so to speak, he wants to give a report, but he can't. Why can't he? Because he doesn't have a mouth. Again, this is all in spiritual terms, which is a bit hard to understand, but just to bring it down to our level of understanding, he doesn't have a mouth. Why? Because the avera that this person had done was created without the power of speech. Right? For example, stealing, right, whatever it is, being Chal Shabbos, who knows? Such an avera does not have the power of speech. It wasn't created with speech, therefore the malach that was created through that avera does not have that power of speech either. What happens is these averas accumulate. You have these huge warehouses of averas, and then when a person goes out and speaks Lashon Hara, he creates a spiritual essence, some kind of malach that wants to give a report to Hashem, and that malach does have the power of speech because it was created through speech, through Lashon Hara, through speaking Lashon Hara. But not only that, not only does that malach have the power of speech, he then in turn goes ahead and gives the power of speech to all the other malachim, the negative, the evil malachim, who were created by all the other averas, he gives them the power of speech as well. Which means that speaking Lashon Hara opens up the floodgates for all the averas that a person had done previously, and now they can go ahead and all give a report to Hashem of exactly what this person had done, what averas he's accountable for. So now, Moshe Rabbeinu means is now I understand why they're suffering so much. Now, it wasn't only Lashon Hara, but the fact that Lashon Hara opens up the floodgates to all the other averas, that's why the Jewish people are suffering in such a horrible way. Okay, let's see weiter. Veishma Paro Sadovar Zeh Veivakash La'aregis Moshe. Paro hears about this, and he says, okay, we got a serious problem on our hands. The heir apparent, Moshe, is joining in with the help. He's joining in with my slaves. What am I going to do? I got to take care of this matter right away. So he executes Moshe. He's trying to kill him. And it says there were many nisim that were done. Some of the guards turned blind. Some of them turned deaf. They couldn't see. They couldn't hear. And Moshe was able to...
Yeah, I'll bring one down. He had a sword. It didn't work. So
right.
He had a bigger sword. He went and he tried to hit. And he hit him in the neck. He bounced back and he killed him. He killed the one that was trying to kill him.
Right. It says his neck turned into to marble. That was one of the nisim that was done. Vayivach Moshe b'nei Paro. He managed to run away. He managed to escape. Vayeshiv Be'eretz Mitzrayim. Vayeshiv El Be'er. He goes over Be'eretz Midian. He goes to Midian. And he goes to the local hangout. What was the local hangout? The Be'er, the well. That's where everyone used to come.
Yeah, but you forget about Yimtzum. It was 40 years before he got there.
There are different midrashim.
In Egypt, he didn't get there right away.
Right. There are different midrashim as to what he did. Yeah. Meanwhile, okay, yeah, that's true. Yeah, he went to a different place. He became a melech over a different town for a period of time. Yeah. Okay. According to Midian, the priest of Midian, who was Yisro, he had 7 daughters. So they come. It was the time of day to water the sheep. The 7 daughters of Yisro come. And now, why were his daughters the shepherds? He couldn't hire any local shepherds in Midian. He had to have his daughters be the shepherds. Usually, women are not shepherds.
They didn't like him.
They didn't like him. Exactly. Why not? Because he used to be the priest of Avodah Zarah, of idol worship. And then he saw the truth. He saw the light. He realized that there's nothing to them, nothing to the idol worship. And he says, guys, sorry, but I'm retiring. I'm not willing to go ahead and...
I'm going to make Gaia.
You're covering this. I have a couple of kashas for a little later on.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So therefore, once he did that, the people of Midian excommunicated him, said, okay, you don't want to serve Avodah Zarah, we're not dealing with you, we don't want you here. So he couldn't hire any shepherds from any local shepherds. So his daughters were forced to be shepherds. But the other shepherds come and they shoo them away. According to one opinion in the Gemara, they actually were trying to throw them into the well, the daughters. According to another opinion, they were actually trying to rape them. And Moshe comes up, he's the hero of the day, he rescues these daughters, and he waters their sheep. But they go back home, and they tell him exactly what happened. What happened today that you came home so early? According to the simple understanding, the reason why they thought Moshe was Egyptian was because he came from Egypt. He was still wearing Egyptian clothes. Again, there are other midrashim that he went somewhere else, but according to the simple pasuk pshat, he came directly from Egypt, from Mitzrayim. He's still wearing the clothes, and that's why they thought he was Egyptian. And so they tell us, Father, yeah, this Egyptian man saved us from the other shepherds, and he not only that, but he watered our sheep. Where is he? Where is this man? Why did you leave him? Why don't you bring him home and feed him bread? Now, anytime the Torah uses the word bread, it's really code for relations. We find this with Eshes Potiphar, when it says that gave Yosef, he made him in charge of everything in his house, except for the bread that he eats. Now, what does that mean? Obviously, he didn't care that for Yosef to be in charge of the bread, but the Chazal say what he was referring to his wife. Right? He didn't want Yosef to get anywhere near his wife. So, to over here, what Yisro is talking about is he asks his daughters, why don't you go ahead and bring him to the house? Maybe he will marry one of you.
He was stuck with all of his daughters, and nobody was going to marry them because they didn't want to have anything to do with them.
Right, exactly. V'yol Moshe l'shevet ha'sa'ish. Moshe agrees to stay with Yisro. V'yitanes yitzver v'itoy l'moshe. The Chazal say that it didn't get married, you know, they didn't like start dating and get married right away. It says that at first Yisro thought that Moshe is a witch or a wizard or some kind of engaging in some kind of witchcraft. Sorry?
A warlock is the man. Warlock.
That's what they call a man.
Okay.
A man.
Oh, good to know. Nowadays in modern political correct, it's a male witch.
A male witch? Okay. A warlock. Good to know. That's what he thought Moshe was. A male witch or a warlock. So he went ahead and he imprisoned him. He put him in prison. And Tzipora was the one who came every day to give him food and water.
I was going to ask. First he says, invite him in. Right? And all of a sudden... He brings down here that he knew he came from Egypt. He was afraid of Paro if he left him, and so then he imprisoned him. I mean, What's the change? Here, he gave up all his baloney that he was thinking before. And now this guy does him a big favor and he puts him in prison.
Right. It's a good question, but it seems like he was afraid of him. He was concerned.
It's a turnabout about what he was thinking about.
Right.
Well, since I mentioned that, so later it says when he asked permission to marry Zipporah after he found out that she kept him alive, and so it says that he told her, okay, but your first son will have to give it, be an idol worshiper. Right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
No. But he gave up idol worshiping already.
Right.
That don't understand what is he saying to her. He gave it up, so how is he want to give him a condition that his first son should be dedicated to that?
Yeah.
And maybe that's why he wasn't circumcised right away, and that's what happened.
Yeah, that's a good question.
That reason doesn't gel.
Yeah, it seems like there's tears. Yeah. Here, good question. I don't know.
You'll see the movie, you'll find out.
Yeah, all the answers are in the movie.
Sure,
Jethro, the movie.
Okay. In any case, he marries Zipporah, but tell it Ben she gives birth to a boy. But the vikar shmei gershem ki omar gereisi be'eretz nochria. Pasuk Chavim Gimel continues. Ve'yim bayomim harabim ahem ve'yomas melech mitzrayim ve'yonchu bnei Yisrael bina avoida ve'yizaku. Batal shav osam ela lekim min ha'avoida. So in those days, the king dies, right? And bnei Yisrael they're really suffering. So the Midrash says, what's really going on over here? What's happening here is that, according to one opinion at least, is that Paro did not actually die. Exactly, he had tzaras. He had leprosy. And he calls over his physicians, tells them, guys, what do I do? What do I do for the leprosy? They tell him, in order to cure yourself from the leprosy, what do you have to do?
You have to bathe
in blood. Mm-hmm. But not only any blood, it's got to be fresh blood, and it's got to be baby's blood. So it says every morning he would kill 150 babies to bathe in their blood, and every evening he would kill 150 babies to bathe in their blood. That's the kind of cruel king that Paro was. And that's why it says, "Ve'onchu bnei Yisrael mina avoda." They were suffering, literally. Their children were taking, literally, their children were being slaughtered. Taken away from them and slaughtered. And that's when they really cried out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when they really cried out, that's when Hashem finally answered them. Until then, they didn't have even time to cry out. They were so engulfed, they were so involved in being slaves. They didn't even have time to cry.
They didn't have the strength either.
Yeah, they didn't have the strength. But they were suffering so much that they didn't even have the ability to speak, to daven. Right? Just the ve'onchu. Anocha is a sigh, a groan. Just that's all they had the power to do. And that was at least something. That was something that Hashem, so to speak, can hang onto. And he says, okay, now it's time to save the Jewish people from Egypt. Ve'ishma elikim is not kosam. Hashem listens to their sighs. Ve'yizikar elikim is brislais Avram es Yitzchak ve'Yaakov. He remembers his promise to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov that he would bring the Jewish people into the land of Israel. Ve'yara elikim es b'nei Yisrael ve'yeda elikim. Now it is time to finally redeem the Jewish people. U'moshe ha'yareis tzayin Yisrael chayis nekoyen midyan. Moshe Rabbeinu is, meanwhile, he became the shepherd. Now it says he spent many, many years in the desert. This is, he left Egypt when he was 20. And this is happening when he's 80. So this is 60 years later. During those 60 years, Moshe Rabbeinu spent a lot of time growing, working on himself, and elevating himself. And as he's the shepherd, it says, Ve'inagas atzayin achar midbar ve'over el haro el kim choy reva. He sees this vision of a burning bush. Vayar v'ina sne bayar ba'esh v'sne einenu ukol. And this burning bush is not being consumed. Now, obviously, Hashem could have revealed Himself to Moshe Rabbeinu in many different ways. Why did He choose to reveal Himself to Moshe Rabbeinu through this burning bush? There are many explanations given. One of them is that Moshe Rabbeinu felt that the Jewish people are being pulled down by the Egyptians. He thought that, you know, maybe they should be redeemed, but there's no way they're not affected by the customs of the Egyptians, right? They've been there for so many years, they're enslaved, and there's no doubt that they kind of fell into the trap of Egypt. They became Egyptians, and that's what he thought. And now Hashem is showing him, you think that the fire, just like the fire of is burning this bush, but it's not being consumed, so too the Jewish people in Egypt are being burnt by the fire of the Egyptians, but they're not being consumed by the customs of the Egyptians. Don't you think that there's nothing left to save and they're all Egyptian now? They still remained pure and holy. They have that little spark, that little pintle yid inside of them. He goes over to see what's going on. He realizes there's something going on over there. He calls out to him from within the burning bush. Meshach Rabbeinu says, "Oh, hineini." Vayomer, al tikrav haloim, sal na'alecha me'al reglecha, ki amakam asher ta'ato emet olav ad maskoideshu. Take your shoes off because you're standing in a very holy place. There are many different pshatim as to what exactly this means. Why he's asking him to take off his shoes. But we're not going to go into that right now. It's more deep Kabbalistic explanations. Vayomer anochi Elokei avicha Elokei avraham Elokei yitzchak Elokei yaakov v'yasher moshe ponav v'kiyorei me'abit el Elokim. Right, Hashem says, it's me. I'm the God of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And Moshe is hiding himself. He does. This is the first time that Hashem is revealing Himself to him.
Doesn't he? It says here that he called him in his father's voice.
Right.
So you wouldn't get too
startled.
You know, sweating everything else.
Yeah.
Does anyone comment about the double ocean of Moshe Moshe? Usually there's a reason why things are repeated.
Yeah. It happens usually when, like, every time, you know, Hashem reveals Himself to someone, like Avram, I mean, it says Avram, Avram, right?
But I thought the reasoning behind that is because they were calling out to his Yetzer Tov and his Yetzer.
Right, right. Yeah, there are explanations, yes, over here. But yeah, that's more of a side point.
Okay.
So Hashem turns to Moshe and he says, "Vayar Hashem rei reisis oni ami shavu mitzrayim v'sakosam shemati mipnei noishav ki yedati es mechoyvav." Right, I see the suffering of the Jewish people and I want to save them. I want to bring them over to Eretz Yisrael. It's time. The crying of the Jewish people has come to me. See the pressure that they're under from the Egyptians. I want you to go ahead, right, and save the Jewish people. Moshe refuses. Maral brings down that he was actually arguing with Hashem for 7 days, 7 full days. He refused to go ahead and to be the Redeemer. Right, he gives him the sign. Vayomer Moshe Elokim, hina anochi bo al bnei Yisrael, v'amarti lehem, Elokei avoseichem shlachani aleichem, v'amar li mashmei, ma amar aleihem? What should I tell them? What's the name of this God? Vayomer Elokim l'Moshe, eyeh asher eyeh. Vayomer koyter m'lebnei Yisrael, eyeh shlachani aleichem. Go gather the Jewish elders. Right? So he's telling them to gather the elders of the Jewish people, right? Now it says that when Moshe Rabbeinu gathered the elders, he wanted them to come together with him to Paro. And the Medrash brings down is that as they're approaching Paro, the palace of Paro, each one of them drops on off one by one. They were terrified. They didn't want to go to the palace.
It says that all the gates were guarded by wild animals.
Yes, yes. Okay, you know, there's a lot more to be said, but it's time for Marv, so we'll have to continue next week.
Tune in next week.
To be continued.